And welcome, folks. This is Truth Versus News on the 12th of November, the day after the 11/11 Veterans Day, an important remembrance of things that have happened and things that are about to happen. So here we have the best people in the world for the show here. We've got Professor James Fetcher, and we have, he's just a wonderful guy who's written several major books that you've got to read. They're outstanding. And we also have Scott Bennett, who is just a great psychological operations officer in the military who knows what's really going on around the world. And we have Brian Davidson, who's just a very sharp private investigator. Anyway, Jim, is Ukraine winning the war back in the Middle East? What's going on back there?
Well, it's fascinating, Don, that we got the head of the Ukrainian armed forces declaring that Ukraine has lost the war. We're losing. Ukrainians reel from war chief statement. In eastern Ukraine, where another grueling winter is descending, one Ukrainian soldier had a grim assessment. A 35-year-old fighting near Bakhmut went further than comments from the Ukraine's most senior military official, who conceded the war had reached a stalemate. I've been saying that for some time already. Step by step, we're losing the war, the serviceman said. The longer this static war continues, the worse it is for us. The front line, occupying the east and south of the country, has barely moved since November, despite repeated strikes and a Ukrainian counteroffensive, which failed to penetrate even the first of the four lines of defense. Ukraine's general, Valery Zaluzhny, surprised observers with an unusually candid assessment that the warring party had reached a deadlock. Just like in the First World War, we reached a level of technology that put us into a stalemate. There will most likely be no deep and beautiful breakthrough. The comments weren't cold water on the highly touted counteroffensive that has gone nowhere. The Bush gained little ground. Journalists found that Ukraine was still battling Russian forces in a key village that Ukraine had claimed to have recaptured. In response to Zaluzhny's comments, a senior official of Ukraine said the country was facing a turning point and would need to decide on a strategy of how to win the conflict. Presidential aide Mykhailo Podolyak, meanwhile, conceded in turn a period of fighting and run into difficulties. And Oleksiy Danilov, the head of Ukraine's Security Council, acknowledged new approaches are needed. Ukrainian forces have urged the West to provide F-16s and long-range missiles. We have problems with too many issues. First, the quality of training for our soldiers. Second, we don't have enough weapons or artillery. We're starved for artillery, and it's getting worse. Zaluzhny did win praise for outlined measures to break the impasse, including innovation with drones and anti-artillery technology. Another Ukrainian military analyst was optimistic, and Zaluzhny had outlined a fresh course of path to success. In general, there is consensus that Russia will not win and Ukraine will not lose. The Kremlin, however, had a different take. No, it's not reached a stalemate, said the Kremlin spokesman. Russia is steadily carrying out the special military operation. All the goals that were set will be fulfilled. In Kiev, President of the capital praised Zaluzhny for telling the truth. We all hope for the best, but we all prepared for the worst, said a maiden walking near the square, Maiden Square, with her mother. She warned against the consequences of not acting. All the guys and girls who died there, all civilians, military, everything will have been in vain. Meanwhile, here we have Ray McGovern interviewed about it.
Okay, thank you guys so much for joining us. We have a lot to go over in today's show. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the Russia-Ukraine war, what's going on with Putin. The CIA is now trying to clean up the mess of the U.S. State Department. We're going to be talking about Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israel-Gaza conflict. Ray, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Most welcome, Stephen.
Your training with CIA and delivering the security reports to Ronald Reagan just lends so much usefulness to us who are just trying to understand how the government works, these intense conflicts and how to resolve them. Are you familiar with the beef that's going on between Ukraine's General Zelensky and President Volodymyr Zelensky? And can you give some background on what caused that infighting, and which of them do you think is correct?
Well, the infighting was caused when Zelensky got up or talked to the London Economist, I think it was, and said, you know, we're at a stalemate. We really need to figure out what to do now. And Zelensky went off this rocker. No stalemate, don't say stalemate. We're going to win this thing. We're going to win, you know. Now, it's Zelensky, the president, who is going crackers, so to speak. He's delusional. And a very interesting Time front page or cover article just last week gave chapter and verse about that from his lieutenants. So there's a very strong movement within the Ukrainian superstructure there to ease Zelensky out. He's completely isolated. Problem is, they don't know exactly who to put in yet. And it's a real rock and a hard place because they have the Nazi element there with the Azov battalions and all those very, very strong people, some of them under arms. They have Zelensky, who would seem at first glance to be the obvious pick, but they've got all kinds of other things, including an attempt on Zelensky's life, for Pete's sake, when one of his main aide-de-camps was destroyed, was killed by a live hand grenade. So there's lots of intrigue going on there. I would not, if I were an insurance company, I would not give Zelensky any more life insurance.
Okay.
Scott, your thoughts? You're muted.
Well, Ray McGovern is quite experienced and seasoned in his intelligence analysis. Like most NSA guys, they're not that creative, intuitive, or imaginative. They're number crunchers and language guys. So he reports the facts pretty plainly, and you know, I think there's a lot of nuances that we can expand around that. The bottom line is, the war is lost. Russia has won it. It's got more kings and knights and bishops and queens on the chessboard. And Ukraine essentially has nothing but pawns that are semi-lobotomized already anyway. But the Ukraine has been wiped out militarily. It has, you know, a ragtag leftover army that doesn't want to be there, that have been pulled off the streets, roughed up by a bunch of fat beer belly Ukrainians with the IQs of chimpanzees, and thrown at the front line and told by Zelensky, the Jewish Zionist, go die for Ukraine, essentially, so he can move Khazarians back into that region. You know, the entire Ukrainian map has been changed. And the other thing that's happened is they have just declared that a Ukrainian colonel named Roman Zhervinsky is responsible for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And I did a press TV interview on that. Don and I can play that as a bonus round. But the interview essentially with a Roman Zhivinsky said he was responsible for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. They've consequently, or actually I should say, they've thrown this guy in jail, allegedly, like over 6 months ago for corruption and such. So I see this as an overall, the U.S. is cauterizing and tying off loose ends. It is distancing itself from Ukraine. And you see that by the CIA Mockingbird, Time, Newsweek, New York Times, Washington Post, all beginning to slowly separate from Zelensky, slowly separate from Ukraine, distract people in different directions. And I think this is, you know, because the U.S. realizes Russia has essentially won the entire board. There's nothing left to play. And Europe is starving and going the other direction. And, you know, there's a lot of chatter in the embassy State Department cables about how the U.S. is losing the narrative on all fronts. So I think Zelensky is a dead man walking. They're looking to create scapegoats for things like the Nord Stream pipeline. My next anticipation is that they are going to set off Again, the nuclear Zaporizhzhia plant, if they can get away with it. Hopefully Russia is smart enough to have stopped that. But I think they're going to go into a wild last death throw before this war is over in the next month. Jim?
Don't you agree? It is just bullshit to claim that this guy was responsible for Nord Stream. That was a U.S. operation, Navy divers, and the whole bit.
I said that on the interview. I said, look, a bunch of fat Ukrainians dressed in Speedo swimsuits aren't going to rent a yacht and go in the middle of a frozen, cold North Atlantic Sea and jump overboard with flippers and snorkels and swim down and drop charges onto a cable that is impossible to locate without sonar and radar. And the only ships that have that capability are military. And the only ones that have been out there have been NATO U.S. ships. So without a doubt, Seymour Hersh's assessment is exactly right. And it is going to be an act of terrorism that the U.S. is going to be prosecuted for inevitably. The wheels of justice are slow, but they are turning. And Biden's head is about to be crushed in the gears. Jim?
Brian?
Well, I get the feeling that Russia's intelligence services are telling Putin to just be patient and wait for the West hegemony to implode.
That's right.
You know, there was a lot of chatter about why isn't Russia fighting harder? Why aren't they bringing in the big guns? Why aren't they, you know, doing what they're capable of doing when this thing first started? And there was a lot of criticism that was going towards Russia related to, hey, you're fighting a war and you're not winning it as fast as you should. But I think Russia's had a strategy all along that they're just, all they got to do is wait it out and wait for the West to implode.
Yep.
The world is turning against the West. BRICS gained a lot of traction very fast. There's a lot of talk in NATO and the UN about the US hegemony overplaying it. There's war crimes being exposed all over the world by the mainstream media, and somebody's got to do something about it if these organizations want to continue to have any credibility whatsoever. Meanwhile, we're paying $1 trillion in interest now. We're $33 trillion in debt. The dollar is on a decline like we haven't seen in a long time. It's being artificially supported and inflated by quantitative easing. We're involved with these Israelis in what is an absolute atrocity that's going to turn the world against the West. And I have a feeling that when it comes to that war, Russia doesn't want to have bad blood with Ukraine when this is all said and done. That's why they've been nice about it. And they have been relatively nice, considering the fact that they were Western puppets setting up missile silos pointed at Moscow. It looks to me like Russia basically just took the tack that, hey, we're going to wait out this Western overplaying of their hands, and we're going to watch this thing implode. And that looks to be how it's playing.
Yeah,
very
and
nice.
Europe, they don't want to offend. They've never. You're right, Brian. They've never wanted to offend Europe either. And Europe is going to swing back in their pendulum. It's like, you know, don't scare a cat. Just let it come to you naturally.
And I think it's an economic necessity paying, you know, 20-year contract for liquefied gas from America at 4 or 5 times the price they can get cheap gas from Russia is ludicrous.
That's going to get tore up like the JCPOA, Jim.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the new speaker has made a brilliant move by coupling aid with Ukraine for the border. There's an old saying about treating yourself the way you treat everyone else. U.S. politicians bark about how they love to help everyone around the world. At the same time, things are falling apart at home. Democrats even love to throw money at those at need at home without taking care of hardworking citizens paying the bills. The new speaker aims to change this. He's made Dems furious by coupling Ukraine aid with funding for the Mexico border. We have to take care of our own border first, Johnson said. What this is about is advancing the agenda and first priorities of the American people. Dems have lashed out at many levels. They don't like anything he's doing to help the American people. A group even banded together claiming Republican cannot move their extreme, cruel immigration agenda through the regular legislative process. These are the same parties who bowed to every sidestepping political move orchestrated by their previous leader, McCarthy, in the House. They claim Republicans are trying to make an end run around Congress and exploit two foreign wars to force it into law. Johnson, in his ever-calm demeanor, dusted off their attacks and laid out his reasoning for helping Americans. He called their tactics absurd and said Democrats are not listening to their own constituents. He noted Americans understand the nation's role as leader of the free world, but that we have to take care of our own house first. He said coupling domestic funding with foreign makes sense to people. He believes there's growing support in the GOP and across the aisle for this move. Johnson said, securing our border is an essential priority for the American people. Under Joe Biden, there have been 6.3 million illegal crossings, that he said, more than the population of the state of Delaware. We cannot continue this. Everyone knows it. Noting that fentanyl and human trafficking come across the border daily as well. I think the people are with us. He supports paying $14.5 billion, tapping into $67 billion allocated for the IRS, sending Democrats in a feverish rant, take money from the IRS to pay foreign bills, and for a more secure border. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, you know, these are the subjects that are ramping up. The security of the borders, the awareness that you may have all sorts of sleeper cells coming into the United States. You know, some of the people that I know that are been talking on the alternative media have said the same thing. 1,000 bad guys can cause massive chaos in the United States. Remember the sniper of DC, a two-man operation in which they were traveling around in the back of a car shooting at people randomly. The entire city and the entire region of Washington, Virginia was shut down over the DC sniper. You could have similar situations all over the place. So I think, you know, all of these pressures are starting them out, and the border is going to become the preeminent one in the coming weeks and months, Jim.
No doubt, Brian.
Well, America is quickly becoming a surveillance state when it comes to American citizens. But we're letting all these guys come across the border and we don't have any idea who they are or what they're all about. I don't buy it. It's bullshit. Somebody is behind this, funding this operation. And I have a sneaky feeling that these are the same people that are pulling the strings with these Democrat politicians. Ever noticed how unified the Democrat Party actually is? Like every vote, everything, every issue, no dissent whatsoever within the party? Could there be something or somebody big enough to have bought all of them? Remember the James O'Keefe interviews when he was interviewing the guy from BlackRock and the guy laughed and said politicians are as easy. He said they're cheap. They're 10,000 bucks. The Democrats obviously are selling out the nation, but the big question is why? What's the upside? More security spending now because we have this new threat of all these people that have come across the border. Every time I see an operation, I see more security spending. More surveillance apparatus taking place. Votes going towards the gimme, gimme, gimme mindset that the Democrats bring out. The ability to corrupt and destroy our culture, which our culture is very much a Western, British-style culture with its own American flavor. They need to destroy our family units. Take a look at what's happening. Just look around. You can feel it. You can smell it. We are becoming the real threat, and they're trying to neutralize us by bringing in some Hispanic guy that's going to cancel out our vote, and who somebody's funding these people to come all the way up and across that border. Who is it? And who else do they control? Those are the questions we've got to figure out.
Well, we know the UN and DHS are running a camp down in Panama to promote all this. And we know Israelis are running the convoys. We got Crux with the Star of David, I do believe George Soros is the core and the heart of the matter. And if he'd ever been arrested and tried and executed, the whole world would be better off by a considerable margin. Meanwhile, a far-right minister in Israel is talking about nuking Gaza as an option, that the population should go to Ireland or to the desert. They'd be very happy with us. Palestinian state, provided we're in Jordan or in Egypt, or just load all of Palestine aboard a ship, float it out to sea, and sink it. A minister from the extremist Otima Yuat party said one of Israel's options is to drop a nuke on the strip. Asked in an interview whether an atomic bomb should be dropped on the enclave, Heritage Minister Amichai Ayah said this is one of the possibilities. He, of Itamar Ben-Gvir's far-right party, is not a member of the Security Cabinet involved in wartime decision-making, nor does he hold sway over the direction of the war against Hamas. Nevertheless, he voices his objection to allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza, saying, "We wouldn't give the Nazis humanitarian aid, charging there's no such thing as uninvolved citizens, civilians in Gaza," meaning even little children, little tots, women, grandparents, they're all responsible, equally culpable with Hamas. He backs retaking the territory, restoring settlements there. As about the fate of the population, they can go to Ireland or desert. The monsters in Gaza should find a solution by themselves. He said the Northern Strip has no right to exist, adding that anyone waving a Palestinian or Hamas flag shouldn't continue living on the face of Earth, and you should be shot if you wave a flag. Another minister has called for sterile zones free of Palestinians near the West Bank. Far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich has called for the creation of sterile security zones around settlements in the occupied West Bank to prevent Arabs from entering them. In a letter to PM Benjamin Netanyahu and the defense minister Galan, Smotrich, a de facto governor of the West Bank, demanded Palestinians should be barred from the zones encircling the settlements in the territory. The move presumably would include lands Palestinians own, even to harvest olives. In the letter, he denounced the continued neglect of the security of the settlers in Judea and Samaria, the Israeli name for the occupied West Bank. The concept of security is shaken, referring to the October 7th assault, which resulted in the killing of around 1,400, and we have video showing it was the IDF itself using Apache helicopters that was bringing about most of those deaths, if not running the entire op. Close to 10,000 Palestinians, now much more, have been killed in the retaliatory onslaught. The writing's on the wall. I'm not ready to be part. I will not agree to additional blood under my watch due an insistence on maintaining distorted perceptions. Since the Hamas-led attack, he and other national security advancer have inflamed tensions with the security minister distributing arms like 300 or 500 machine guns to settlers to use to slaughter Palestinians in the West Bank, and halting the transfer of funds to the Palestinian Authority. It has stoked what the UN calls an alarming escalation of settler violence against Palestinians, at least 144 killed in the territory of the West Bank by Israeli fire. A UN official said Israeli soldiers and settlers have committed human rights violations and war crimes. Of course they have. Scott, your thoughts.
Well, this is where we're at an existential crisis in America as Americans. This is where we're on the tip of a eclipse or twilight zone, a complete turning inside and out, and that is the freedom of speech, the freedom of expression, the freedom of conscience, the freedom of the ability to gather and associate, and in addition, petition of the government for the redress of grievances, which includes some people's perceptions that the government is grieving people by engaging in war hostilities, war crimes, some would brand, and militant aiding and abetting of war crimes by funding an Israeli genocide and ethnic cleansing campaign in Palestine. People have a legitimate problem with that, especially if they have relatives living in these foreign lands. If for example, America just started bombing Scotland and I had relatives up there being killed, I'd have a grievance with that. I'd say, wait a minute, why? What is this? This is wrong, especially if it was indiscriminate, if it was totally based on false premises. And to say, not that they're going to start bombing Scotland, but to say that anyone that that challenges the narrative, that supports Palestine, that supports and defends Islamic people and condemns the Israeli people, not the people, but the government, because of their actions, not because of their blood or their hair color or their skin color or anything like that, but because of the government policy of genocide, prison camp attitudes, apartheid, whatever you want to call it, a 20-year at least, if not a 50-year campaign of ethnic cleansing and property confiscation and geographical expansionism, all of which are in violation of international law, settlements in international law violation, all sorts of other things that most people don't know about. If we're going to silence that expression, if we're going to dogmatically proclaim that's un-American, then we are not an American nation anymore, as the founding fathers envisioned. We are to allow the free expression of ideas with the understanding that the best ideas and the best people that express them will always rise to the top and attract the majority of reasonable, sane people. And from that is distilled reasonable and sane policy. Right now, we're at a questioning of that. And even Donald Trump has questioned that by saying some of these student groups should be removed from campus. I have a big problem with that, just like I have a big problem when he says take the guns away under red flag laws and let the courts work it out. How's that going to work out when Biden sends his minions to go and collect people's guns and then we wait on his courts to work it out? Oh, which are, you know, an emergency order shutdown because we're in a crisis or something. That's where people forget that the Constitution and the government and the courts and the people are all interlinked in a web of balance, where the courts balance the executive branch, the executive branch balances the Congress balances the courts, and on and on and on. They're all balanced. And when we start to take certain things away or off balance it, we are jeopardizing our identity, our freedom, and everything that made this country what it is. And when we do that, we're descending into the tar pit of slavery, stupidity, and death inevitably. And this current Gaza-Israeli conflict and the Muslim-Palestine people have no clue, including people up on the highest levels of President Trump's campaign. They have no clue how easy and how quickly their kindling can be ignited into an inferno that the United States does not have the capability to contain. I know, because I've seen it up close and personal when I was at Special Operations Command, Central Command, and the State Department. I know just how incendiary these people and their culture and their personalities and their religious zealotry is. And if you set it off, if you ignite it, especially with people that have nothing else to live for, that their entire identity is around religion and live on breadcrumbs and drips of water because we've denied them everything else, there's going to come a point when that straw breaks the camel's back and you're going to erupt the entire populations of North Africa, of Yemen, of Iraq, of Syria, of Turkey, of Indonesia, of Pakistan, of Iran. And you have no hope of containing them because they are going to unleash a savagery, a running at the machine guns, like the film Gallipoli, a Zulu rush, whatever you want to call it. They will run with a jihad sacrificial cry that no Americans have the capability to even understand. And we're in dangerous ground because we are foolishly thinking that we can contain this when in fact it's only going to get worse. Israel Netanyahu, unless they capture and prosecute and execute Netanyahu, unless they stop this, Israel is going to be destroyed. McGregor has said that. Ritter has said that. I say that. They are not going to contain the inferno that they are igniting, that gets worse with every video of little babies with their legs blown off, and women and children smashed by concrete that the Israelis have laughed and bombed. And Russia has observed this too. Putin's observed this too. And China. So the American arrogance thinking that this is contained also to the Muslim world is another failure, because it's not. The Muslim world, the Chinese world, the Russian world, the North Korean world are all interlinked. And the BRICS economic union is the interlinking sovereignty that binds them. And Europe recognizes that. They're not going to step in. So the only one that is standing up is the United States and Israel. And by the way, Bolivia and like three other countries have already registered international criminal court complaints against Israel. That's going to domino throughout Central and South America, Africa, and elsewhere. So increasingly, America is isolated. And if we start to shut down our own people in this debate, you're again another inch towards civil war and uprising in this country at our own hand. Jim?
Brian?
You know, the Jews tell us that they're very religious people. Some of the basic tenets of religion include morality. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's possessions. Thou shalt not kill. There are fundamentals that real religion has. And fundamentally, it's summed up with love your neighbor as yourself. Let me ask you a question. Are these people in any way treating the Palestinians north of them in Gaza like their neighbor? In any way. They're trying to destroy them. And as far as I can tell, when you boil it down, it's for gentrification purposes. They want to take it over, redevelop it, and rebuild it, but they can't pull it off because they've got to get rid of all the people that live there. I'm telling you that these people in Israel are the whore that your mother warned you about. People get married and they're faithful to their wives and they have a good family and they resist the urge to commit adultery for personal pleasure or for personal gain. Why are we sleeping with this foreign whore? What is she doing to our nation? When did we give up our bride, our right, our Western culture, our Western identity? When did we leave that? When we got an appetite for more money.
Yes.
That money is at the root of all kinds of evils that are taking place right now in that area of the world. And there's going to be payback. I'm telling you that the reason that they're doing this, the reason October 7th happened at 6:30 in the morning with all this babies having their heads blown off and all this terrible, poor Israel, it's another Holocaust. Oh my God, it's terrible. So people can get rich off the oil and gas resources underneath that land and so that they can clean up that part of town to gentrify it. But you've got to get rid of the current residents to do it. They don't have a soul if that's their religion. We're sleeping with them. We Americans have given up our first wife, our constitution, our bride, to be in bed with this foreign whore that has no Western values whatsoever. It's got to stop.
I like that, Brian. I just point out this is a brilliant form of religion that believes in genocide. It's rooted throughout the Old Testament. Slay your enemies. They're entitled to do it. They are God's chosen people. This is their promised land. They are entitled to slaughter all the Palestinians. They believe that. And they have nothing but contempt for man's law because they claim to be following God's.
Well, Jim, one thing to add, though. And this is good that you just said that. Let's remember, these are not Semitic people in Israel. These are Khazarians. These are the Ukrainian Jew, the converted. They converted to Judaism. They're not Semitic people. They came down from Khazaria. There's the Ashkenazi side, and they have moved in there. From the Balfour Agreement, moving them in there. You know, there's a fascinating study. I'll be real quick. There's a fascinating study that talked about World War One. I think Brian probably is very familiar with this too. World War One, where Germany declared to Britain during the war, okay, let's have a ceasefire. Let's call it all off. Germany went to Britain and said, here's the peace terms. When Britain was losing, right? Germany was essentially winning the entire war. Germany said, let's just all be friends again, as if it was the war never happened. The Jews went to Germany and said, don't give up. We'll bring the Americans into the war. The Jews brought the Americans into the war. The Americans joined the British. They overthrew Germany. The Germans found out later it was the Jews that stabbed them in the back. After the Jews had went to Germany when they got kicked out of Russia, when the Tsar kicked them out. And that was one of the reasons for their hostility against the Jews in Germany that had turned against them, that had stabbed them in the back. And they said to Britain, if we bring America in, you're going to give us Palestine, right? There's a whole study in all this. So this is not a Semitic people. This is the Khazarians. There's a whole lot of lore there, but they pretend to be the ancient people of Israel, and they are not. And that's what most Americans don't understand. That's why they think, oh, Christian Zionism, we're backing Moses's children. No, we are not. We are backing frauds and liars and demoniacs. Dustin Nemos, I did an interview with him. I'll put up, it was a fabulous interview in which he examined a lot of the historical, a lot of rich textures that are woven in this. Jim?
Very good.
I want to point one other thing out, too. You're misunderstanding the Bible if you think that's all it was about. What they're practicing is not the Bible. It's not the Old Testament. It's not that God. What they're practicing is Kabbalah. This is all the writings and all the interpretations that became their holy books that were in addition, that reinterpreted it, that brought in all those old ancient Masonic symbols and ancient Masonic gods. They call themselves... They refer to the Bible because they think it gives them credibility. The truth is, it's the Kabbalah. They're into the old wizardry, the old witchcraft, and the old sorcery. That's what it really is.
Very, very good. Very good. Meanwhile, there appear to be some pecuniary motives at work here. There's a bit of a video.
The number of children killed in Gaza now sits over 4,000, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Close to 10,000 people killed in a month of continuous Israeli airstrikes. Newly released satellite images are just stunning to look at this morning. Shows what Gaza looked like before and what it looks like now. Take a look at these images. And this weekend, an Israeli heritage minister said in an interview that dropping a nuclear bomb on Gaza was a possibility. And he said that there's no such thing as a civilian, that everyone is basically involved in the October 7th terrorist attacks, in his words. So those 4,000 children, they are also part of this. They are also part of the attacks, I guess, the 4,000 children. Let's try to unpack this, because there's a lot of moving pieces this morning that I want to try to understand here. Let's bring in United Nations Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter. Scott, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Israeli officials today, I'll just kind of give you what their words are, Scott. These are not my words, saying Israeli officials today have called these civilian casualties. They're aware of them. They're calling them, quote, the tragedy of war, end quote. They also say their response, which includes this expanding ground operation in Gaza, is necessary to root out and destroy Hamas after what happened on October 7th. So these 4,000 children, let's talk about that number. First of all, do you feel confident in that number? Because what obviously people online will say is, how can you trust what the Palestinian Health Authority has to say about this number? Does that number sound right to you based on your own sourcing and the upwards of 10,000 overall killed so far in these Israeli strikes?
The number actually sounds low. Let's keep in mind that that number doesn't include the missing. That these are the bodies counted. There are many thousands more missing. When a building goes down, they're in the rubble. For all those Americans out there that, you know, rally around 9/11, you know what happened with those buildings when they came down, how difficult it was to account for the numbers. It's happening right now. This is what's happening is a war crime of unimaginable scope and scale. I mean, no, first of all, it is imaginable. It's real. It's happening. It's not unimaginable. It's right there in front of us, guys. They're literally leveling a city. They're leveling, you know, neighborhoods filled with civilians. This is the most despicable behavior imaginable, but it wasn't unpredictable. Clayton, Israel, since 2006, has articulated this very policy. Why is the world only waking up now to the fact that it is official Israeli policy to punish the civilian population of an entity that they have violent disagreement with? In 2006, the commander of Israeli forces in the north, when fighting Hezbollah, instituted what he called the Dahiwa principle. Dahiwa is a neighborhood in West Beirut that was leveled by Israel, leveled, flattened. They slaughtered the civilian population there because he said they will pay the price for Hezbollah daring to stand up and beat our troops on the ground. See, Israel can't do a fair fight, man on man, soldier against soldier. They can't do that because if they do that, they lose. The only way Israel can win is to collectively punish the civilian population in a vain effort to get them to submit. It didn't work in 2006. It didn't work in 2008 when they instituted the Dahiwa principle on Gaza for the first time. 2010, 2014, 2018, 2020, 2021, and now 2023. It's been going on forever. The Israelis are the greatest mass murderers in modern history. That's the truth.
So when you have this, what's being...
You know, I think that's just such a wonderful statement. There's a lot more going on here, including economic. I want to toss that into the hopper, but I just think Scott Ritter has been doing just a brilliant job in reporting on all of this. Very impressed. Massive oil and gas reserve discovered under Gaza. Israel has already granted development licenses to six different big oil companies, including BP, even though it belongs to the Gazans. We should know by now, when political parties in the U.S. show bipartisan support, something sinister is taking place. 4 years ago, the UN Conference on Trade and Development published a report on the unrealized potential of Palestinian oil and gas reserves, which could generate hundreds of billions for whoever develops them. It criticized Israel for preventing Palestinians from pursuing those resources as a way to alleviate their massive poverty. It just so happens, the U.S. is now proposing an international coalition to preside over Gaza once Israel pushes its 2 million inhabitants into Egypt or out to sea or into Jordan. Since the war began, Israel has already awarded a dozen gas exploration licenses to six different companies. Face it, this plan comes straight out of the disaster capitalism playbook. It hit right in the middle of a global energy crisis exacerbated by war. As FDR observed, in politics, there's no such thing as coincidence. It's not just about gas and oil either. As Richard Medhurst has observed, there's a wide range of economic and logistic incentives for the U.S. and Israel to depopulate Gaza including the construction of a canal alternative to the Suez, allowing them to dominate maritime trade and giving them key military advantages. The preferred canal route runs right through the middle of Gaza. They've been planning this for decades. Now they have a great moral cover story. It all looks like a repeat of the Iraq invasion. Western countries antagonize their rogue actor until they do something that seems to warrant an extreme response. Likewise, the war in Ukraine has nothing to do with democracy, human rights, or even Russian aggression. It's about natural gas. The U.S. and Russia have been fighting for dominance for at least 10 years in Ukraine, which sits on the Europe's second largest natural gas reserve. Russia has also exported natural gas to the EU through pipelines across Ukraine. Month after Russia's invasion, a pro-Ukrainian group sabotaged the Nord Stream pipeline. We've discussed that already. Now Germany signed a 20-year deal to import liquefied natural gas from the U.S., which is, from an environmental point of view, way worse than coal, but at 4 or 5 times the expense. Meanwhile, before all this, Joe Biden's son Hunter just happened to find his way onto the board of a Ukrainian natural gas company. Now do you get it? But you see the facts, you can't deny it. You want to deny them, but when you look at world history, U.S. in particular, you come to understand every single war we fought was about resources or influence or both. Even when there's a human motive, the presence of resources and fossil fuel tip superpowers into violence. Why else would our leaders spend hundreds of billions on these wars and literally no other human right need like hunger? Freedom and democracy are always a cover story. Meanwhile, Mike Adams observed, Gaza being exterminated to make way for lucrative Ben-Gurion canal that'll cross Israel to the Red Sea. A competitor to the Suez is being planned to cross Israel and connect the Mediterranean with the Red Sea. It would give the U.S. and Israel control over a key choke point in the world for military ships, grain exports, energy, and other commodities. The planned route goes right through northern Gaza. Many analysts believe Gaza has been destroyed, wiped out to make way for the construction of the canal, which would bring in billions a year for Israel and grant Israel control over its access. Scott, yours.
Well, you know, again, the failure of the United States, the miscalculation is interpreting Gaza, Israel, the Palestinian conflict as a closed arena with just Israel and the Palestinian, cavemen, knuckle draggers. And the United States is sort of the tag team partner that's outside the ring, and Israel's in there. So it's the Israeli Palestinians in the ring, but the United States is waiting to be tagged to come in too, and it'll be a 2-on-1 fight. And the United States will prevail, and that's the miscalculation, because what they don't understand is outside the ring, you have rooting and ready to go in and help the Palestinians are the Turks, are the Syrians, are the Iraqis, are the Iranians, are the Egyptians, are the Jordanians, are all sorts of South Africa, North Africa, Indonesia. They're all united in their Islamic Muslim commonality and their outrage about the death of women and children and civilians. This is no longer about, well, Israel was attacked on October 7th. No, it's not about that anymore. It never really was. We know it was a planned operation. It was part of this long-term real estate steal. But no one's even listening to that. There's no more conversation about that. At this point, it's all about buildings being detonated and filmed, like implosions and collapses and detonated buildings. And if you're clearing a city, that's what this is about. It's about videos of children being taken into emergency rooms without electricity with their legs blown off, crying. It's about little girls whose parents are now dead and she's alone, covered in dust. These are the images that are going out to the Muslim world, who are not infatuated with their own narcissistic reflection and their cell phones. They're not taking selfies of themselves. They're not addicted to Facebook, Twitter, social media. They're not flying the rainbow flag and pretending transgenderism, human right. That's in America. That's in the West. It's not in the Muslim world. And that's the major miscalculation and the arrogance to think that that's gonna continue is going to be our undoing. And I could see, and I've said this on interviews I've done, I could see the United States embassies in all of these Arab Muslim countries being overwhelmed, overturned like they were in 1978 when the embassy of the U.S. in Iran was taken over by students. I could see that happening in every Arab and Muslim country. These embassies of the United States being bombed. We already see the military bases in Iraq and Syria being attacked. Qatar is going to be attacked. Central Command, Africa Command is going to be attacked. All over the United States, flags and structures and buildings are going to represent to the Arab and Muslim world a needle in their eye, a thorn in their side, an injury, a hurt, a tormentor, and they are going to inevitably get so infuriated that children 3 or 4 or 5 6 7 8 9 year olds are going to throw rocks at U.S. flags, personnel, people, civilians, because of the outrage that's coming. And no amount of Trumpian bloviation or Biden fantasy or any other person that comes in is going to be able to calm those seas. They may yell peace, peace, but there is no peace. And I foresee this getting worse if we don't have a major return to our American values, not the faggot Lindsey Graham values or these Zionist whores that have been bought my money, a return to American values, a Reaganite attitude, a Kennedy side of attitude. Let's be fair and equal with every person, every tribe, every nation on earth. Let's have a relationship with every country on earth. Our problem has been we've looked at the Arab and Muslim worlds in the Middle East through the prism of Israel, and that has distorted our vision. And John F. Kennedy Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I always get their names mixed up. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says, well, Israel is our best aircraft carrier in the Middle East. He is a fool when he says, well, they influence. The Israelis are not an aircraft carrier. They're the Titanic. They don't influence. They torment, bother, annoy, and infuriate because they hurt and steal and destroy from the other people around them. They are not America's friend, and they certainly are not a public relations interface that we should have. And that's been our problem. We have these fools running for office or a containing office who are putting Israel as our interface with that part of the world, where that is why they dislike and they fear and they are disgusted by us now more than ever before, because Israel has been our ambassador. The best thing we could do is cut Israel out like a cancer from every relationship we have with every nation, and we might find every nation has a friendliness towards us that we haven't seen since George Washington was in office. Jim?
Very astute, Scott. Brian?
I have no problem with a guy that goes out, works hard, creates something, and gets rich. No problem at all. That's what the American work ethic is all about. We go out there, we might start with nothing. We can make a bazillion dollars. Sky's the limit. I have problems with thieves and liars and people of low and poor character who will do anything to make a dollar. Those are the people that I abhor. And even in my business, you know what? Little secret. I try not to do business with gypsies.
Yes.
It doesn't work out really well. It always gets more convoluted than it's worth. Now, does that make me a racist? I don't know. Maybe.
Makes you wise.
I just don't see how I can do a good deal with a bad guy. It's always deception. It's never what they tell me it's going to really be. Some people believe in victory through deception. Some people believe that your character doesn't matter. All that matters is the size of your bank account when it's all said and done. Those people make me sick, and I won't have anything to do with them. So why is America sleeping with this bitch?
Yep. Well said, well said. And in the dictionary under Zionist, there's a photograph of Nikki Haley. Let me see where we can
go. Oh, yeah, yeah. By the way, I love the gaslighting. October 7th started it all, right? October 7th started it all. 6:30 in the morning. Everybody had a nice festival that had just been relocated to this particular area in one of the most secure places in the world. It all started at 6:30 in the morning on October 7th when Hamas decided to attack all the civilians and take all these people. Oh, there's all sorts of cell phone footage that originated from a scene because everybody was up and dancing and listening to music. Lies, 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 deception, deception, deception. I don't want to have anything to do with those people.
I think you got it right. I'm even getting reports the whole damn thing was done by the IDF and that Hamas really didn't have anything to do with it. We do have video of Israeli gunship shooting up the concert goers. And I'm convinced that more than half of the victims were done by the IDF, not Hamas, if Hamas had anything to do with it. Meanwhile, I did an interview with a fascinating guy, Mazim Qassam, from Bethlehem just this morning. He's an astonishing guy. Let me just get us started. Are we duped to focus only on Gaza's suffering? Israel's genocide of Gaza is intentional, planned, and ongoing. No sign of slowing down. On the contrary, with no water, food, and medicine, it's accelerating. Israeli leaders boast openly they do not care about what the UN says or what world leaders say. Israeli fascist leaders say they do not care what statements are issued by governments of Muslim and Arab countries, nor do they care if public pressure causes some Western leaders to moderate their language from unconditional support for Israel to show concern for the humanitarian catastrophe unfolding in Gaza without naming the perpetrator. Israel actually can use a humanitarian catastrophe as if it were an act of God and not their agency as bargaining chips. Israel can offer pauses in the slaughter in exchange for further weapons from Western governments and release of Israeli prisoners, maybe even a temporary ceasefire, and fuel to any remaining hospitals in exchange for additional support to continue the genocidal occupation and for impunity from facing tribunals for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Israeli leaders are crystal clear about their crimes, and they get their way by genocide and total state terrorism against populations. If you have any doubt, listen to them. They even say openly that Hezbollah, if Hezbollah continues its resistance in South Lebanon, then all of Lebanon will pay a devastating price, and Beirut will be like Gaza, totally devastated. Israeli military spokesmen gave the same threats to the cities in the West Bank, like Jenin and Tukaram and even Ramallah. These are not idle threats. If the world is not willing to stop Israel from devastating cities in Gaza and is even giving it more weapons to commit genocide there, why would it not also devastate Lebanon or the West Bank? If you get away with one genocide, you get away with others. After all, international law cannot be enforced in this case. According to Israeli leaders, global public opinion and diplomatic pressure will not end its carnage. Many human rights advocates are at a loss as to how to bring that about. Don, take us out.
Okay, yeah, this is November the 12th. What a week it's been, November 11th, the Veterans Only Action internationally. And this has been a powerful show, and we've got another hour to go. So you want to come back and see what's really happening. So come on back, folks, and share this widely. Thank you so much.